Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello, welcome along to another episode of The Kickoff. Hope you're well. A lot of love for George Hamilton during the week, by the way. You can catch that chat wherever you get your podcasts. It's evergreen. There's nothing in there that will go stale. George is great. He's in great form. We're actually going to talk a bit about match commentary later on in this show. And I'm delighted to say Colin Bouygues has returned. How are you?
Happy New Year.
Can you say that now?
Get out of here.
21st. You came back. You decided to come back. Your hair is longer. You look more relaxed. The last time you were on the show, you had finished off your all-time Premier League 11, and I thought you just did a runner. You just got so much slack for it.
But I did. And then people eventually came around to it, and like, there was one person who commented, was like, oh, this is actually a good team, if you really stop and think of it. Because everyone has their perceived biases, and they were showcased.
Yeah,
loud and clear.
They were.
That's fine. I stand by it.
Vinnie Perth was one of the men who stood. Yeah. He actually filled in for you one of the days over Christmas. I had a chat with him. My first time ever chatting with Vinnie. Great crack.
He's a good guy. He's a good boy.
But I don't think he was too impressed with
He just did it for the crack, like, because it's worrying. He's managed Dundalk. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I love you, Vinnie.
Would you say that to his face? Because he's a scary man.
I said it to him only last week off the pod, because he was naming his Ireland Irish 11.
Oh, yes.
Did you see it?
I saw a clip online. See that? Is the team full team online?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So you can catch that on Off the Ball socials.
Can you quickly run through it? Go on. Do you remember it?
He had given and he had, like, I can't remember the back four. Definitely Richard Dunn, because he's best friends with Richard Dunn. Steve Staunton, Dennis Irwin was left back. The right back was, I think, Stephen Carr, I want to say. Anyway, he had Roy Keane in the middle, and he couldn't find a midfield partner for Roy Keane. That was the big thing.
Okay.
And he had Damien Duff on the right, because he couldn't find anyone on the left. Damien Duff. I was like, that's a cop out. Like, put him in where he does real damage. I know he'd been right for Fulham, but where he did his real damage, Blackburn, early Chelsea. So he couldn't find anyone on the right, really. And then up front he had Robbie and Niall Quinn. And he was like, well, I don't really know what to pick, like, so I'm going to put John O'Shea there, because he won loads of trophies. And I was like, is this a League Cup game? What's John O'Shea doing centre mid? And he went, I can't find anyone. And he got all defensive then. And I was like, well, there is a solution to this. Like, there is an answer. And I said, like, Stephen Ireland was unbelievable. He's the most talented Irish footballer, Premier League. And he went, I'm not putting him there. And then I said, look, Vinny, is that my fault you don't know what you're talking about? Thankfully, I know Vinny well enough.
He's at
this time, so it was fine, because he gave it back and then some.
Yeah, but, and it was justified. Tell you how hard it is to pick these teams.
Yeah, it's really hard. So we actually criminally overlooked Andy Townsend, really. It's funny, Andy Townsend is kind of, obviously he's not forgotten by lots of people, and he's a bit of, I don't know if he's an Aston Villa legend. He probably is, I suppose. He's definitely an Irish legend from the Jack Charlton era. Mm. But I don't know if it's like, is he prominent in the minds of, like, Premier League fans? I know football existed before 1992 and all that, but there were the parameters we put in it in Premier League era. But I suppose the answer is actually Andy Townsend.
That's why Paul McGrath wasn't in your team, I guess.
Sorry, I think he had Paul McGrath as the other centre half.
Had he?
Yeah. Then he was going to put Paul McGrath midfield. And I say, McGrath never played midfield in the Premier League, really. He did for Ireland in the late 80s, I think, okay, into the 90s. But I don't think he played centre mid for Aston Villa in the Premier League. And then the compromise, I think, was just put Stephen Ireland on the right, and then you can have probably like Andy Townsend in the middle with Roy Keane and Damien Duff on the left, and then suddenly it's a good team. Because the right hand side, there actually kind of is a lack of depth there. Like, Jason McAteer was really good for a brief time at Liverpool in the mid 90s, those 4-3 games, and we'll get to that because there's a commentary moment from the first of those epic 4-3s between Liverpool and Newcastle in the mid 90s. He pinned the right hand side of midfield and was really good,
right?
And then Ray Houghton. You could argue, like, Ray Houghton's obviously an Irish legend, but again, he was probably past it by the time he got to the Premier League. Again, he played for Villa in the Premier League, and I think he played for Crystal Palace. But I suppose Houghton, you know, his first famous goal is in Euro 88. Now, in fairness, when he scores that goal against Italy in the Giant Stadium, that is 2 years into the Premier League in 1994. But it feels like he's like not quite the player he was when he had been playing with Liverpool.
Okay.
So it was tough criteria to get to the right.
It is.
So
yeah.
You got there in the end.
Yeah, you would have had a wealth of choices if it was just all time that played.
And then we asked to do the same thing with Keith Tracy. You know Keith Tracy?
Yeah.
And for people out there, played for, like, I know people know this, but just in case they don't, played for Blackburn and Burnley and Republic of Ireland six times, including against Argentina.
Brilliant pundit.
Excellent, excellent, great fella. And he, we gave him the same task on the back of the Vinny selection, which is the day before. Keith came on the next day. I says, you see what Vinny did there? Yeah, can you do the same? Yeah, perfect, no bother. And he came on and he thought it was all time 11. So the midfield, Cahill, was outrageous.
Oh, yeah.
Because
okay.
he had Roy Keane, Liam Brady and Johnny Giles. Oh, just stop. And then on the left, he had Damien Duff. And you know who he put on the right? Oh, fair mind, right? It's a 4-5-1 or whatever. So Duff's on the left, Keane, Brady and Giles in the middle. Aidan McGeady on the right wing.
Wow.
I was like, this boy is lucky, man.
Wow.
He's lucky.
McGeady's somewhere looking at that saying,
stop.
Yes, thank you.
No, he was. He was good, like, for Celtic, but, like...
Well, look, that's exactly it. If you could have picked all time, you're a serious midfield.
And I got me thinking of all the people's feedback on the Today FM social accounts to do with the Premier League all time 11. And I really appreciate everyone getting on to me. It was really nice. I do wonder. I was like thinking, is there like a universally accepted 11? I wonder what the most palatable 11 is that will get the least amount of abuse. And I was like, I don't think one exists.
No, because that's the beauty of it.
So someone emailed, and a colleague of ours sent it on. I just wanted you to see this email.
Oh, yeah.
And this fellow went mental about the lack of Man City players. And I was like, can you tell him, can you actually ask, who's Haaland play for? I don't know who he plays. Who's he play for?
Really questioning your authority.
It really
as well,
annoys me that, like, how sure of themselves people are when they reply to you in this instance.
Yeah.
Why do you think you're right? Why do you think you're correct? And then anyway, eventually someone saw sense in the comments and were like, see, this is the problem with these 11s. Everyone's very biased towards their own team, our preferences for individuals, and they feel personally hurt when said individual is not selected in the all-time 11.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of sport. Just once you channel it in the right way.
And that's it, right?
You don't feel hurt and then there's hate and, you know, come on.
Yeah.
You tried your best. You tried your best.
And it worked out for it. That was still the best team. Objectively, that's the best team, Cahill. Yeah. We should do your... what would be your favourite all-time team to name, like, in any sport? Do you know, if I was to give you the same task?
Oh, I get you, yeah.
What would it be for you?
Tipperary hurling team.
From this
millennium.
How many of millennium? Okay, millennium, you might be okay. Would there be more players from 2019 than 2025?
Yeah. There would be more players. Yeah. Because you've, like, Padraig Maher and Seamus Cannon and all... We're not going to get
it. We can't.
Don't wind me up.
They'll be screaming at us to produce. What are you talking about?
This is a football show. And you actually did mention Man City there. And that's where I want to start with, because what's happening there?
Yeah.
Manchester is currently red after last weekend. And City have continued with their current form and have lost 3-1 to Bodo Glimt in the Champions League during the week. Mm-hmm. Rodri sent off as well. Not a great night for them. What's going on?
Don't know. It's a good question. They're red with embarrassment or possible fury with high blood pressure.
Come on.
How red Manchester is at the moment. It's wild. We had the Athletic writer Sam Lee on the show during the week. So he covers Manchester City.
Yeah.
And we had him on last Friday, which was the day before the Manchester Derby, and a couple of days after they beat Newcastle at St. James's Park in the League Cup semi-final first leg. And the Man City back four that night against Newcastle when they won 2-0 was made up of two players out of the four, half of the defence who was discarded for this season, but Nathan Ake and Kushinov, they weren't making matchday squads. The right back was a creative midfielder that they signed from Wolves, Mateus Nunes, who can only get into the City side when he plays right back. And then the other centre half was a young fella called Alain. Mm. So at the time, I was giving credit to Pep Guardiola for getting the performance out of them. And Sam Lee said, yes, 24 hours or so later, United wiped the floor with City. Wiped the floor! With City at Old Trafford in the Manchester Derby. Could have and should have been far more than the 2-0 final score. There were three disallowed goals, hit the woodwork twice. Gianluigi Donnarumma had a very good spell in that game where he was probably the best keeper in the world for about 5 minutes. Amazing.
Could have been 5-0 easily. Like.
Easily. And so similar defence. And then the one that goes to Norway, like you said, Bodø Glimt. And then it was 3-1 against the side. Right now, Bodø Glimt are quite good and they should have won by now, but it was their first win in the Champions League this season out of 7 attempts. And they're not even top of their domestic division. In Norway, like Norwegian football, obviously, by comparison, wouldn't be the strongest in Europe. And they're second in that league. And Bodo Glimt wiped the floor with City.
They looked good.
Really good.
It's really good.
The amount of chances they created, again, it could have been more.
Yeah.
And so Pep Guardiola cut like a kind of surprisingly kind of serene figure afterwards, kind of like, oh yeah, no, this happens. I guess he's keeping calm in the face of adversity. But you remember this time last year, roughly, when he was scratching himself and he was getting all the cuts all over his face, Pep Guardiola, and he was real stressed.
Yeah.
It was like an actual self-harm. And he had like, there was like half a dozen games in a row where they weren't getting a win. And it was weird in hindsight, particularly, that he kind of kept calm throughout the whole thing. Because every time in the last couple of years, I would say, that City go on a poor run, people start questioning if Guardiola has motivation left. And maybe this will now be his last season at City and he'll go. And I asked the same thing of Sam Lee. And he said, the thing is, it's so hard to answer that question when he will go. Because just when you write him off and think, oh, he's kind of finished now, he's kind of done with this, he gets them back. And I kind of expect that to happen now at City. They have Wolves at home in the Premier League this weekend.
I mean, if they don't win that.
If they don't win that, that's a good point. Like, then that probably dominates our conversation next week. Like, we're definitely leading with City. If they do win it, then people kind of quietly go about their business, fair enough. And then they might have a winnable game after that again. I think they do. And if they win that, you're like, okay, City are back again. And like, if Arsenal do slip up, I still think that the most likely team to capitalise on that hypothetical slip would be Man City. But they're not a great City side. I guess that's the power of Pep. I don't know what's happening at the moment, but they do go through this little spell every season now, it seems, where they have like a catastrophic dip, but it's only temporary.
Yeah.
And he fixes it.
I did see a clip of, his name escapes me, former Sky Sports presenter, kind of disgraced now.
Could be so many people. Who's this?
Andy Gray's best friend.
Oh, Richard Keys?
Richard Keys. Saw a clip of Richard Keys and Andy Gray talking on whatever sports show they're presenting.
They're Far East, yeah,
is it? Yeah. And he says, I'm telling you, he's going to be gone this week. He's going to be gone this week. And Andy Gray is like, well, that's a good call if you're right. That's a great shout if you're right. Is he getting this
wrong? There has to be a study of how that dynamic has shifted. Like, Keys and Gray used to be on Sky Sports, as you know. And Andy Gray led the charge, right? He had a show called, was it The Final Word or The Last Word? Similar there to what?
To
a show there on Matt. And Richard Keys would ask Andy Gray questions and he would be the oracle of football, like, and Richard Keys would stay quiet and ask Andy Gray those questions.
Yeah.
It seems to be reversed now. Now, Andy Gray asks Richard Keys for his opinions and Richard Keys is these like boiling hot or freezing cold takes,
yeah,
whatever way you want to say. So he's saying Pep Guardiola's going to leave this week is the ultimate like win-win situation for them. That will go viral. I'll get a load of abuse, but I always get abuse. And imagine it worked. Imagine I was right and I'd be the first person to say it. But it's such a nonsensical thing you say in the pub with your buddies. I'd be gone this week. Like, but then yeah, like you'll have no proof of it really unless he has an incredible source that he's not saying anything about. But I haven't heard anything about that.
It's ridiculous.
And also, did he say that after Bodo Glimt or after the Manchester derby?
No, after the derby. Yeah. So it was even during the...
he must got excited there during the week when Bodo Glimt won.
He's like, I'm telling you, it's going to happen now.
But we had Sam Lee was saying that Phil Foden's going hiding at the moment in games, which is really interesting that he has like a subtle way of passing the ball off because he doesn't want it. And like Phil Foden goes from extremes of being like, oh, you know, this is the answer to England's creative problems and put him in the number 10 position because there's so many candidates for that role in the national side for Thomas Tuchel versus... he's totally anonymous. And I don't know if he's a symbol of what's happening in City at the moment, but like the Antoine Semenyo signing is excellent. They just got Mark Gahey from Crystal Palace. So if he comes in and starts at the half, that might sort it out. They still have an issue of like, how do they fit all these talented players into the final third? Because you have Cherki, who's a brilliant playmaker. Foden on his day is excellent. Doku in one wing, Semenyo on the other, Haaland up front. Someone has to drop out realistically because you still have Bernardo Silva and Rodri to pick. So it's still an excellent squad. But I don't know that they just have this kind of temporary significant drop in motivation. But like, why would you not be motivated for the Manchester derby?
Yeah.
They looked like they didn't want to be there.
I wonder the whole charges, which seems like it's not going to happen this year.
Well,
yes, it's January the 20 whatever, and it's not going to be this year the charges. Does that hang over their heads?
I don't know. I don't know about that. I think people have like passionately stopped caring about that. I was in Prague in February of 2023 and I got the news that day about the 115 charges
that long ago,
and I'm going to Prague next month again 3 years later, and you know, there'll be nothing. And I have a source on this, right? a barrister source who tells me that there are three people working on that case, right? But it's not their full-time job. So they actually have the day job in law.
Yeah.
And they do this as well. So that's one of the reasons for the delay. The other thing about it is, according to this source that I have, it would be pretty good. Even if they're found guilty, the expectation is that Man City will immediately appeal.
And
the appeal process will also take years.
God.
So like Pep Guardiola will have been manager of Manchester City 10 years exactly this coming summer. And even though he's been there that length of time, there's a very good chance that Pep Guardiola won't just have departed the club, but he'll be long gone by the time there's a final decision here.
Wow.
Okay. Included.
So
I think you can forget about it. I think you forget about it. And meanwhile, by the way, like everybody can be justified to be angry in the interim about like, what the hell? So they're allowed to sign players, but a legal person will tell you, like the same person, well, they're not guilty of anything. So that's why they're allowed to continue as they are. They're, you know, they're allowed to sign players because there is no decision yet finally on what's happened.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I think they can name a new, they can name an 11 based on signings they've made in the last 12 months. Like,
yeah.
The show continues on the road for Man City.
Sure. As you just mentioned, Semenyo and now Gehi as well. So like,
it's a hell of a team, isn't it? When everyone's fit.
Yeah. And in terms of United, I mean, what a difference a week makes. What a change in fortune for United fans right now.
I know, it is amazing what a difference a game makes, like one game. But I was like entertained. You know, I asked this question on Off the Ball, and I'd love our audience here to answer because we couldn't get one on Off the Ball. Who's the most entertaining side to watch in the Premier League? Now, that could depend on your definition of entertaining, but basically they play attractive football and you're excited to watch them play. And between all of us and the audience too who wrote in, couldn't find a definitive answer. I think the closest we got was Bournemouth. Okay. But even then, like, say this past week, Bournemouth played Brighton on Monday Night Football. I don't think people were racing to watch it. You know what I mean? Because you used to be able to rely on Spurs for a good game. But even Spurs are dull enough under Thomas Frank in the football that they play.
It's dull, but does it make it... The style of play might be dull, but does it make it entertaining
to watch the Premier League table, yeah. That's entertaining. Because it's like, how are Man United this circus that everyone laughs at? How are they so high up in the Premier League table? It's a damning indictment on the rest of them.
Yeah,
you know?
It is.
But
there's no one really chasing Arsenal.
And I think then when it comes to Arsenal, it's like they're just really efficient. And Mikel Arteta has built an outstanding squad. Like their depth in every position. You saw during the week there, Gabriel Jesus. You wouldn't write him off, but it's almost a bonus when he plays. He scores twice away to Inter, who are top of Serie A, who were last season's Champions League finalists. And Arsenal go and wipe the floor with them 3-1.
And Gyökeres gets a goal.
Gyökeres also scores.
Badly needed goal for him.
Yeah, totally. But their depth is incredible. But I suppose they just go about their business so kind of efficiently, you know. And maybe that's... Look, this is all very subjective because, like, we could get a caller or someone to write in saying, like, I, for one, love watching Arsenal. Or have you seen Fulham lately? They're very attractive on the eye. It's just, I'm trying to think of a team that you look forward to watching outside of the one that you support yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a good question. But... So subjective that
it is,
it's
so
hard
subjective
to get an
because
answer.
You could say someone like, I really like Liam Rossini's Chelsea now, even though it's early days, I find their games quite entertaining. But I suppose what I mean by that is basically players taking on their man, I love watching, at the risk of losing possession. Shots from distance, I love, and quick counter-attacking football. And I don't really see any one team who does all of that.
Mm.
Elements and occasions in games. But let's say I loved Maurizio Pochettino's Spurs. I loved them. They came like second a couple of years in a row. This would have been like late 2010s, culminating in the Champions League final 2019. Yeah. I loved that side. Loved watching them play. I even liked Arsenal kind of 2014-15ish. And I know like it was Arsene Wenger, latter era Arsene Wenger, they were never going to win the league. But I liked the football that they played. Man City and Liverpool 2018-19. Was that our 17-18 when they finished 98 points, 97 respectively? They were streets ahead of everyone else, the other 18 teams in the league, but the football they played, unbelievable.
Remember the year Leeds?
Oh, I loved Leeds. That David O'Leary side, is it?
No. In the last, maybe...
Oh, Bielsa. Yeah, brilliant.
Brilliant. That was just chaos. They were losing nearly every game, but it was
amazing,
chaos.
Like,
that was entertaining.
I wouldn't say they were appointment viewing, but I would definitely have watched the Leeds game back then. And they're quite good under Daniel Farke, by the way. I'm not writing off the Premier League as like being useless or whatever. Obviously, there's still incredible like moments in games, and there's still great goals to admire. So there was a bicycle kick scored in that Brighton-Bournemouth game I mentioned last Monday night. There's still individual moments of quality. But I just wonder, is there like enough to get your teeth sunk into with a team that you would have no natural affiliation with, but you want to watch them? And I don't know if we're lacking that.
Interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting point. Mm. If United do win this weekend...
Oblivion. What are we going
to
do? Like,
give it to Carrick.
Give it to Carrick in the season.
Are Manchester United fans more, I suppose, experiences on their side now? They know not to get too excited.
Yeah.
Play this by ear and just see out the season. Stop calling for anything and let's just play. Great if they win. Great.
Yeah.
And if they lose, well, let's just see what happens next. But I mean, no saying this is it now. Carrick's at the wheel.
Yeah. There seems to be this thing since Manchester Derby is that United fans need to like get over their PTSD of what happened to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It's not going to necessarily happen to Michael Carrick, because there's a lot of people who are like, don't give it to Carrick because look what happened when you gave it to Solskjaer. But there is, I think, like a discernible difference between the interim and the permanent. Because to give a terrible analogy, like Carrick is renting the gaff at the moment, but as soon as he buys the gaff, then he has to deal with all the furniture and all the bills and every problem with the house, right? Then you have to have a plan.
Okay.
But if you're interim until the summertime, if you're renting, you know, like you're going to just move on to another place quickly, and you know, just wipe your hands of the place. Like, there's a finite time with it. So my only doubt about it is that there is an end date to this arrangement.
Yeah.
So it's very much easier to give it your all and be loosey-goosey with it, because it's like, look, if it doesn't work out, whatever, I'm going to be on the summer anyway.
We're trying.
You know, whatever. Then he gets a job permanently in a 3-year contract with an option of a fourth. Oh, now you have to plan. Now it really is up to you. Now we're backing you. So I'm talking obviously a medium term here, because that's quite a bit away.
Yeah.
If they beat Arsenal, I just think enjoy the moment. Just enjoy it for what it is. It's an incredible couple of weeks. If they beat Manchester City resoundingly in the derby, and then they beat Arsenal, who have been superb, by far and away the best team in England at the moment. If they beat them at the Emirates, Jesus, that's an amazing, amazing result, whatever way they do it. And just enjoy it for what it is like. And then see how it plays out. Because it's a weird thing about Michael Carrick in his interim spells as United manager, because there's two now. So the first one was back in late 2021 between Solskjaer and Ralf Rangnick. And Carrick managed three games and he got two wins and a draw. But they were really impressive, because they were away to Villarreal in the Champions League, who were then managed by the current Aston Villa manager, Unai Emery.
Yeah.
And they got to that season's Champions League semi-final, Villarreal. So he won that game. Thomas Tuchel's Chelsea were defending Champions League winners, beat them. And then Mikel Arteta's Arsenal. That was first time around. And this time around, he's managed against Pep Guardiola, and he's about to manage again against Mikel Arteta.
Yeah.
So he'll have only, by this time next week, Carrick will have only managed or head coached, whatever way you want to put it, United, five times. And the managers he's faced, Unai Emery, Thomas Tuchel, Pep Guardiola, and Mikel Arteta twice. So you got to give him a normal game.
Yeah, yeah.
So
he needs
after,
one, yeah.
after the Arsenal one, they play, I think, Fulham. Now,
okay.
Marco Silva is actually kind of a very much outside bet to get this United gig permanently. But I'm just looking forward to seeing Carrick when he settles into this interim spell in your bread and butter games.
Yeah.
For want
of
a better term.
Yeah.
But like, I think there's like 16 games left this season, because of course they're out of everything else. Mm. It's just the Premier League.
So which is great. He has time to work.
Loads of time. Loads. But I love the way that they were set up against City. Even bringing Harry Maguire back into the side.
Kobbie Mainoo,
really, like, really good game centre mid.
Yeah.
You know?
Isn't there seem to be some sort of division now between ex-United players who all have podcasts? I'm talking, obviously, Roy Keane, Gary Neville, Nicky Butt, Paul Scholes.
Yeah.
I wonder, the fans now are like, leave the team alone, leave Carrick alone, because there was no... seems to be no support for him at all. Seems to be an interesting kind of vibe there between United fans and the old United stock.
I think you've hit something there, for sure. I do feel that tide is turning a bit against the legends of the club.
Yeah. Like, you know, even on social media, you see some of the Man United fan pages and they have the edits. And one of the edits was of Nicky Butt and Paul Scholes talking about Haaland and how are they going to look after Haaland.
Oh, and how he's going to throw Lisandro Martinez into the net and bully him. Yeah,
yeah, and pick him up like a little boy and all this kind of stuff. And then it kind of clips to Martinez on last weekend and cleaning up, basically. And this is from a United fan page and it's kind of like, you know, shut up, Scholes and Butt and all this. It used to be, I don't know, you see it now with Roy Keane as well and obviously Gary Neville and say, you can't, look, whatever happens, it can't be Carrick next season and all this, you know, these kind of takes.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point because I do feel that too. I think especially if they go and beat Arsenal.
Then it gets interesting.
You could argue that they've beaten the two best teams in the league, not just Arsenal. Like, it is definitely up for debate that Arsenal City, the second best team in the league at the moment. Definitely a contender. It's funny because I don't get the Gary Neville hate about his criticism. People seem to think he has an agenda. I don't. I actually think he is calling it as he sees it. I do think there was a little bit of a shift on Roy Keane last week. And Roy Keane is obviously like monumentally adored. He's never been hotter, as they say. But when he had a go off Michael Carrick's wife, like, what is it, like a decade plus after the initial comment by Carrick's wife.
And it was a tweet.
And like, he brings it up. It's not quite a non sequitur because Carrick was mentioned, but he brings up the wife then. And I think there is an element that like that panel, that podcast, like obviously, look, incredibly popular podcast and it's brilliant. On Stick to Football. But I think there is an element that they're all a bit sycophantic towards him. Like, they're all a bit afraid to challenge him, with the arguable exception of Ian Wright, because they seem to be genuine pals. And Wrighty, every so often, will question what Keane is saying. But generally, Keane will say something cutting and they'll all laugh.
Yeah.
And I'd be so interested to know what would happen the day where they stop laughing. Because without a laugh track, it's not much of a sitcom. It just sounds cruel.
But
because they laugh, it's like, oh, we're all having a good time here. Now, Keane is brilliant. Like, talk about comic genius. Like,
box office.
You know what I mean? This, like, he wasn't just a brilliant player. Like, this guy has genuine comic chops, the way he delivers a line.
And he even did the line on Saturday morning when he was talking about Johnny Evans, and he was saying, Johnny Evans receiving the phone call to come in, he goes, oh yeah, what, look, manager or the under 12 team.
Just the way he says it.
You just see Daniel Sturridge just put his hands.
Why, you see, that works so well of Sturridge going putting his, like, I actually like Sturridge with him, but there was something about that line, it was just so cork the way he delivered it. And like that, like, his comedy makes me nostalgic for cork, because I was like, I know these lads, like, I know the way these lads deliver those lines, and they're some of the funniest people you'll ever meet. But you know the same people from Tip, like, and like, we all have those people's, those characters in our head when we were growing up, like, they'd be the funniest people, like, that you laugh at the most. And so he is hilarious, but I just do wonder if that ever changed, that they'd be like, oh, I don't know about that Roy, because if you don't laugh at him, he'll turn on you. Like, the thing about Roy Keane is, like, Roy Keane is one of the most sensitive people out there. You know, for a guy who's, you know, the ultimate reputation of a warrior, sporting warrior, and thick skin, he actually has very thin skin. Like, you can get at Roy Keane if you have a go off him.
Well, he seems to just hold a serious grudge. That being an example, massive. Michael Carrick's wife.
Never
it was just a tweet.
But it's funny because people who hold grudges generally seem bitter, but he does seem like a man who's incredibly content with life. But he has a compartment in his head to store for the bitterness.
Yeah.
But I suppose he's comfortable being bitter. So, sorry, the original point there was about the... a lot of United fans saying leave Carrick alone, particularly towards the legends of the club. Like, embrace what it is. I do think there's a bit of trauma about the Solskjaer era, and that everyone got a bit too excited and gave him the permanent job prematurely. And I was one of those guys who never felt that Solskjaer was quite right for the job, even when they were top of the league. Like, I remember they went top of the league, they beat Burnley away, and it was like, you know, the depths of the league. It was like mid-January 2021. I think Paul Pogba got the winner and they were top of the league. And then the next day I still don't think he's right for the job. But at that time I was like, what are you talking about? Like, they're top of the league. And I was like, I just don't think he's right.
Yeah.
And within a year he was gone. Now, wasn't helped by the signing of Cristiano Ronaldo.
No.
I know Ronaldo did quite well himself in the second spell. Like, he finished top scorer that season. But I just didn't help the team. And the team had got to the Europa League final against Villarreal and they lost some penalties. And it was against Unai Emery's Villarreal. But I don't think it helped his cause that Ronaldo was signed. Who knows what would have happened?
Because
I know Dave Moore was a huge fan of Solskjaer and would have had him kept on. So there was a big contingent of United fans like that. I was always on the other side being like, I don't think he should get the job. So maybe I do have a bit of that left over when it comes to Carrick. I appreciate their different lads and how they approach it. But it's mad, like the path, like Carrick was, the Carrick's managerial experience, a grand total of interim boss at United for 3 games initially, and he gets the Middlesbrough job. And he did all right there. Like, I
tough think
they were in the relegation. Yeah, Champions is a very tough league. They're in relegation places. He got them to the playoffs, didn't he? And I think he got them to a League Cup semi-final. So he did. He improved them no end. A bit similar to how Roy Keane improved Sunderland when he managed them.
Yeah.
He went a good few steps further by getting them up. And then Carrick was let go because they finished mid-table. So like Carrick was let go by a Championship club. And now people are calling for to get the United job permanently. But I suppose, look, we're living in a Vincent Kompany world now where the guy does really poorly at Burnley when it came to it in the Premier League. And now he's flying it with Bayern.
Yeah.
So maybe we got to look beyond. Maybe I got to look beyond. Like, it doesn't, you don't necessarily have to have the perfect CV in terms of like the natural next steps. Maybe sometimes a guy just does fit the club.
Yeah.
And maybe I need to get my head around that. And my instinct is like, I don't think he's ready for this job.
Yeah,
Carrick,
yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. And only time will tell. I mean, none of the others have worked really. So let's wait and see. But it is going to be box office and it is live on Sky Sports on Sunday. Arsenal versus Manchester United. So we shall wait and see. You actually did mention Ronaldo's return to Old Trafford there.
Yeah.
And I mentioned at the top of the show that there is a great chat with George Hamilton, one of Ireland's greatest ever match commentators. And that's in the podcast feed now. It's evergreen. And I said I wanted to have a chat with you about match commentating because, you know, most of the matches that we're experiencing is on the TV, okay?
Yeah.
And one of my favourite bits of commentary in the Premier League is when Ronaldo returned to Old Trafford in 2021 and they are playing Newcastle. And Peter Drury is talking as the teams are walking out onto the pitch. And this is his, he's setting the scene quite brilliantly. Have a listen.
Matera, Manchester, Madrid, Turin, and Manchester again. Wreathed in red. Restored to this great gallery of the game. A walking work of art. Vintage. Beyond valuation, beyond forgery or imitation. 18 years since that trembling teenager of touch and tease first tiptoed onto this storied stage. Now in his immaculate maturity, CR7 reunited.
How good is that?
He talks all about the nonsense, doesn't he, Peter Drury?
Oh, man. Touch and tease or whatever he says. Yeah. It is brilliant though, and that's actually when you're watching on the TV, when you're watching it and you see Ronaldo just walking out Old Trafford, the red jersey on him. I don't know, there's something about that moment, but there are iconic pieces of commentary. And obviously with George, we were talking about A Nation Holds Its Breath. I mean, you know, that's as iconic as it gets.
Yes.
Have you any favourite?
Yeah, I do. You obviously did Darren Maloney in Troy Parrott, Hungary, yeah?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that will already go down in infamy.
Yeah, because I asked him about that.
Sorry, it's brilliant.
I asked him about that. You know, the need to be impartial and not to become a fan when you're commentating.
Yeah.
But, because, and even he said it, he said that one of the most annoying things you can be is a fan. I'd made the point, I quite liked when Ray Houghton did lose it, though. You know, when they scored it, when Darren Maloney's trying to keep it together. That's okay. It's RTE. They're excited.
Yeah,
Ireland have scored. That's what everyone's feeling across the country. And that's brilliant. But I suppose maybe more so for a game that's on Sky Sports and it's two clubs where a lot of neutrals are watching it. To hear a fan, it can be kind of annoying.
Yeah.
You know? So, but it was just an interesting one. And yeah, so we did use the Darren Maloney and we were saying how great that was. And George even said when David O'Leary scored the penalty against Romania, you know, it's iconic when he says, "Yes, we're there."
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
That's good. You need a bit of
we're
that.
We're there is great.
It's,
yeah.
Yeah, it's
but
great.
He had a great "we're there, it's there" for a goal.
Yeah.
And it really worked. And he had a partnership with Jim Beglin, and Jim Beglin, that's childhood trauma. You know, it's like danger here. And then the opposition would score.
Yeah.
And he would do it like Champions League games.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I have a couple more.
Yeah.
Both involving Martin Tyler. Martin Tyler's a funny one, isn't it? Because he used to get a lot of grief towards the end of his spell with Sky Sports that he lost his pizzazz and motivation. I always liked the cadence of Tyler.
Yeah, do you know what kind of was not good to him were those social media clips where people would mime Or, you know,
there's a few. Yeah,
you know, there's an Irish guy. He was actually, some of them are funny, but he looks so disinterested.
Yeah,
and as Liverpool have scored a goal,
Liverpool particularly. Yeah. And like Liverpool supporters that I would know would have like a grudge against Tyler as a result. But I never minded him at all. I thought he had a great partnership with Andy Gray back in the day. It was amazing,
brilliant.
But anyway, I have two here that was that were in his head. They're actually both from the '90s. So Martin Tyler on Stan Collymore's winner. Liverpool beating Newcastle 4-3 in the first of 2 4-3s in a row at Anfield between these two sides in the Premier League. But what I love about this is it's Rush, Barnes, and then it goes over to Collymore and there's a gap and I let him take it away from there.
Barnes, Andy hanging on for man of the match. Barnes. Still John Barnes, Collymore closing in! Liverpool lead in stoppage time! Kevin Keegan hangs his head, he's devastated.
What an incredible finish to an incredible night's football.
It's so good. It's so good.
And like, it cuts to Keegan literally hanging over.
One of my favourite. I just think it just looks so cool, like the way I don't know how like that would look cool, but it does in my mind the way he hangs over the board.
Yeah.
And I think he goes to Terry McDermott and he's just like, can't believe this. And then Collymore's celebration is kind of similar to Jason McAteer when he scores against the Dutch for Ireland a few years later, is that like he runs around and back to the left up the sideline. He's like doing this Benny Hill, running after him, and it's just like this euphoric moment. Like, and I don't support Liverpool or Newcastle, and I was only a kid, but I love that moment. Oh my god, every time it comes on, I love it. And like, it's just something so 90s of it. Like, the pitch is terrible, it's shocking. There's like patches of green here and there. The offside line joke from Liverpool is a joke. Like, Neil Ruddock is like up like 35 yards from goal trying to play Fasino Espria offside. And you know they're going to the pub afterwards. And it's just like, there's a mixture of like when Sunday League meets top level, because they're also really good players. It was just a great time to be alive. I like that Liverpool jersey, even that collar. But it was just like, Rush Barnes, who were both past their peak at that stage, but they still had a bit of football left in them. And Barnes gets the ball, and like, there's a silence in that commentary, right, where Martin Tyler's not talking, because no one knows what John Barnes is doing with the ball. Yeah. He's just kind of stuck there, and the Newcastle players can't get it off him. And both those players end up going to Newcastle, actually, Barnes and Rush. And Barnes just like, amidst this chaos, is like this calm moment where he sees Collymore on the other side. And Collymore at that point is sensational. Liverpool signing from Nottingham Forest, brilliant. Like, I mean, if Collymore had his head screwed on right, and he would say this himself, he would have been an amazing player, like an England striker. But that night and that era, he was class. And the way he takes a touch, and then Tyler just times it perfectly, the way he comes in and the way he smashed the pass and the eruption from the crowd.
Yeah.
And it just sounds different. It's like, you don't even, the commentary doesn't really sound like that anymore. It's crisper, it's cleaner. There was kind of a rawness, visceral edge to that commentary. And if you look back on that night, there's this kind of, you notice this from 90s footage, is like there's like almost like a smoke in the air or a fog that you just don't see now.
Is it something to do with the lights, the floodlights?
I'm sure there's a technical and perfectly legitimate explanation. Probably not that exciting at all.
No, but it does transfer a certain feeling. Because, and it feels like, why was football just so different back then? But obviously, we're looking at it differently
And if the exact same goal happened nowadays, like, it would still be great. Like, I'm not saying it would be terrible and like, all modern football is crap. Not that. It would be amazing, and it would look probably better on paper. Everything about it could be the same. But the one thing would be missing would be that smoke or fog that descended on Anfield that night. It's really subtle, but if you look back on it, maybe it's due to the camera quality or whatever, but
you see it a lot in Premier League years and things like that.
And it's just you want to go to your happy place sometimes, and that is a happy place.
Yeah.
I've nothing to do with that game. Like, I've should have absolutely
you mentioned
no affiliation.
That game before as well, so it
brings me so much joy. Like, and there's, so as I said, it's the first of 2 4-3s, and then the one year later is really good too, but it's a different sequence of goals, because Liverpool go 3-0 up and Newcastle get it back to 3-3, and then Liverpool win it 4-3. But this one, the original one, is tit for tat. Liverpool are scoring and Newcastle are scoring, and this is like when Newcastle should have won the league. They blew it. They were 12 points clear in springtime and they blew the league, and United ended up winning it. And Liverpool just like, in the words of Logan Roy, like, you know, I love you, but you're not serious people. Like, they weren't the serious side at that time.
Yeah.
This would have been like Roy Evans before Gerard Houllier came in. Like, they were just, they had some lovely players, but, like, you know, famously or infamously, a couple of months after that, that 4-3, the Armani suits come out for the FA Cup final when Liverpool would end up losing 1-0 to Manchester United, and Cantona scores that great goal. And, you know, they come out in those suits, like, and you, Jamie Redknapp and David James, those cream Armani suits. And Ferguson is on the record saying, he says to his coaches, look, takes a look at them across the pitch, and the warm-up goes 1-0.
Really?
Now, maybe he just inserted that little anecdote to make it sound even better.
Yeah,
because,
yeah,
like, the 1-0 didn't come till like late in the game. But he was like, they're done, they're not focused. But they were still entertaining. They know they were an entertaining side, Liverpool.
Yeah. And any more?
Yeah, one more. Tony Adams, a couple of years later, 1998. So this is when Arsenal win the league for the first time in the Premier League, and the first time under Arsene Wenger. And this is just a lovely redemptive story for Tony Adams, who 2 years earlier, after Euro 96, decided to sort out his drinking. He's an alcoholic, and God help. And he has this amazing, like, really candid moment where he's talking to media and he's wearing this, like, blue jumper in 1996. And it's a really sunny, it's a lovely day. And he was just like, yeah, I can't continue like this. I have to get myself sorted. And he does. And a couple of years later, Arsenal win the league in 1998. And this is the last game of the season, I think, at Highbury. It's a beautiful, glorious day. Tony Adams makes this run. And I think Steve Bould or David Platt, one or the other, maybe Platt, finds him over the top. And he chests it and volleys it with his weaker left foot. And Tony Adams wasn't seen as a footballer at all. He was your ultimate hard man defender.
Mm.
But Wenger got a bit of football out of him. And it was like, this guy's actually an unbelievable player, along with being a great defender. And it's a celebration call. He puts his hands up in the air and the sun is shining on him. And it's not just that Arsenal have won the league. It's not just that he scored this great moment. He has had a personally amazing story in the last 2 years where he's got sober. And to this day, he has remained sober. It's an incredible moment.
Now Bold. And it's Tony Adams put through by Steve Bould. Would you believe it? That sums it all up. Arsenal, awesome. The cream of the crop. A defence-putting pass from Steve Bould. A magnificent finish from the captain.
It's so good. Steve Bould was the man. And that was the other thing, because... Yeah, of course it was Steve Bould, because the whole point is that Wenger got all these lads playing football and they hadn't done necessarily under George Graham when they were still winning leagues. But that, it's just, the finish is incredible. Like, it's a brilliant actual finish. But Martin Tyler, like, the way he just, the voice, he loses control of the voice amidst the excitement. And then that, the part where he goes, that, there's a little pause, sums it all up, is the moment where Tony Adams is looking up into the sky with his arms aloft into the heavens with the sun shining down on him. And he's just the... I suppose he's the vision of achievement, and I have arrived.
Yeah, and like,
it's just an incredible moment.
Redemption and everything. Resurrection.
Yeah,
and,
everything, because his life had reached an nadir like not 2 years earlier. You know, like, it's just this, it was actually less than 2 years, because England got far into that Euro 96, got to the semi-final, so it would have been later in the summer, so not even 2 years later, like, because this would have been early summer. And, yeah, you get kind of like goosebumps. I get goosebumps even thinking about it. Again, like, no, I have no affiliation with Arsenal or Tony Adams. Why would I even think this about them? But I just think the commentary was just amazing. And then Andy Gray coming in. They just had incredible chemistry.
They were brilliant.
Tyler and Gray,
and Andy
together.
Gray had some great moments. What a hit. What a hit.
Oh, when Andy Gray used to talk on behalf of the football. That was amazing. He sees me with a.
Yeah.
He sees me and he said, I said, hit me, son. And you know what? He did.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
Kind of feels like they don't make him like they used to. Anyway, Colm, thank you so much.
No bother, boy.
Let's see if we have any iconic commentary moments this weekend. As I said, Arsenal versus Manchester United. That seems to be that doesn't seem to be. That is the biggest game of the weekend. Super Sunday. Coverage starts from 4 p.m. on Sky Sports main event. Some of the other games that are happening this weekend on the telly: Bournemouth, Liverpool, 5:30 on Saturday. Brentford, Forest, that's on at 2 p.m. Also 2 p.m. is Crystal Palace, Chelsea, and Newcastle versus Villa. All live on Sky Sports. Monday Night Football as well. Everton, Leeds United. Colm, thanks a million. We'll talk to you next week.
Nice one.
Good luck.
Sensational. The The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.